Welcome to episode 199 of Telepractice Today with Kim Dutrow-Allen and Dr. Todd Houston.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. It is getting to that lovely time of year that is tax time for most of us. So I've been thinking about it and looking up what is the difference between a 1099 and a W-2 employee? Because in the world of telepractice, most companies are going to drop you into a 1099 employee. And I think for them, it's because it's easiest for the practicing in multiple states and across state lines and everything like that. But I would, when I was looking at some of the differences, I was like, I don't know if we're always really 1099. And I feel like it's hard to be a 1099 employee and have things like IEP minutes and IEP meetings and all of that that we are obligated to meet. And we can make our own schedule, but can we really? Because then you have to match it with the school schedule. So there are some benefits and some drawbacks to the 1099 as far as like getting being able to write things off on your taxes and things like that. But you have to pay all of your taxes. So my suggestion would be just to look at the pros and cons of each. And if you're going into a job that says it's a 1099, make sure that it's really a 1099 job.
Right. Yeah. Know the differences.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a kind of a weird, I don't know, thing to navigate, and something that, we never thought would be part of the things that we needed to know that they didn't teach us in grad school and all of that. But it's, there is a distinction between them, and yeah. Know what you're looking for. And I do hope soon that more telepractice companies will consider doing W-2 employees, because I think that there's a lot of like more support potentially that could be given to SLPs, and to make it more, as we like to say, equal to in-person therapy. It's hard to like drop someone into a district with no training and say that they're the same as the district therapist who had been there for weeks getting training. So there's some interesting things happening around there.
Sure. And my understanding has always been 1099 means contractor.
Mm-hmm.
And the W-2 would be an employee.
Employee.
Mm-hmm. Or then you should also get benefits with being an employee.
Right.
And so it's certainly cheaper for the company to give, to only have 1099s.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. But, so it's an interesting dynamic. And I think I'm seeing more and more W-2s for telepractice out there, but they're still few and far between. And that makes it hard for a lot of people to make that jump, even if they want to telepractice. So I hope it's something that increases some benefits and, employee benefits.
It's almost like they're taking advantage of the field being majority female.
Yep.
And if you have a spouse, they're assuming you're going to get benefits from your spouse.
Yep. Which I fall into that category as well. So it's been, something that made telepractice possible for me.
Sure. But it's also, in one sense, taking advantage of that situation.
Right.
Or they don't have to provide those benefits because, we'll just do it this way. And they're assuming that, the partner is going to have excellent benefits and just carry the family on the benefits.
Yeah. So. But, and I do think that, there are there's been situations where I made more as a contractor than as a direct employee, and that was to my benefit. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is a best fit for everyone, but I just would like there to be more options out there.
I would agree. 100%.
Yeah.
And so who do we have joining us on today's episode?
Yeah, we're excited. We have something a little bit different. We have someone who's not a school psychologist or a speech language pathologist or an occupational therapist.
What?
We're branching out. So we have Chloe Pico Jacobs, and she is a licensed social worker. And she has developed an app that I think has so much overlap with what we do with kids and teaching them language and early intervention, and is just a really cool technology to get us all thinking about how can we use technology to increase our kids' development and, you know, get kids services when they can't get in to see a professional in person. And so we're excited to talk to her.
Hi, are you creative? Do you want to give a webinar or teach a course? Maybe you're a writer. Do you want to create a blog? Maybe you have an idea for a podcast. Whatever your passion is, we at 3C Digital Media Network want you to be a content creator so we can bring your ideas to life. So, to get started, visit our website at 3CDigitalMediaNetwork.com. and sign up to be a content creator. We look forward to seeing your passions come to life on our platform.
Okay, we want to welcome Chloe to the podcast. Chloe, you have a different background than a lot of the people we have on. We're used to a lot of speech language pathologists, but we are open to talking to people in, you know, allied health in general and anyone impacting language development of kids. And I think you fall into that category. So tell us some of your background and how you chose your profession.
Sure. So I am a licensed clinical social worker, an LCSWS, which means I can supervise. And I, up until recently, was a clinical social worker. I've worked in outpatient settings and school settings before, doing a lot of individual therapy, group therapy. I came into social work because I knew I wanted to work with kids and especially young children. I find the 0 to 5 age group, that early childhood age group, absolutely incredible. The brain mm-hmm. development that happens in that mm-hmm. age range is so amazing. It is the best possible time to intervene or prevent concerns from arising. And I find those kids incredible, and I, in particular, enjoy working with their caregivers, whether that's parents, foster and adoptive parents, teachers, you name it. I think that the caring adults in those relationships with young kids have the ability to change the entire course of their lives and development in a really wonderful way. Attachment theory is a huge part of what I do. So you might hear that come up today. Mm-hmm. And I chose social work in particular when pursuing mental health, because I appreciated the way that it incorporates systems work as right. well. So yes, it can be that micro level individual work, like traditional therapy, when folks often think of it that way, but it can also mean impacting social policy or working with a whole school system. So that's, you know, part of why I chose social work in particular. I could go on and on. I love social work. I love kids' mental health. So if you have a specific question about that at any point, please feel free. And the way I found my way to being a therapist in tech, which is a phrase yeah. that's fairly new to me, really ties directly into the Happy Pillar story. So I'll mm-hmm. explain my current role when we get there.
Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead. So what are some of the settings that you have worked in as a social worker?
So I have worked primarily up until this role, I was in an outpatient nonprofit setting. We worked a lot with kids that had experienced trauma. So one of the programs I worked for there supported kids who had been the victim of a crime or witnessed a crime. Another program that I led, which is near and dear to my heart, was an infant and early childhood mental health program, which actually took place in preschool. So really supporting the teachers there, equipping them with trauma-informed skills to engage their kids, to manage behaviors. I worked on that program for I want to say around 6 years. So that was a big part of my work, was actually going into those child care centers and those preschools and being right there with the teachers and supporting them. And then, as I mentioned, doing the more traditional individual therapy that you might imagine. Of course, with young kids, it's a little bit non-traditional in the sense that you use particular modalities. There's a lot of play involved, a lot of working with parents. It's not the talk therapy that adults might be seeking, group therapy as well, parent consultation, but primarily the outpatient setting and then some work in schools as well.
So when we think about children, is trauma the sort of primary negative factor impacting them in terms of mental health?
That's a great question. So trauma, unfortunately, continues to be very common. We know that traumatic events, sometimes you'll hear them called ACEs or adverse childhood experiences, impact about 1 in 4 children. So that means, you know, I always think about that fact, how it lands with folks. They're imagining just the child population, which of course matters very much, but those kids all grow up. So when we think about the whole population as well, a lot of the traumatic events that may have taken place and impacted their lives happen in childhood. So that definitely is a concern and something that we have to deal with. And I know that there are other factors going on as well for kids these days. Social media comes up a lot for slightly older kids. Just the realities of our world today, young kids are very aware of things like climate change. The pandemic impacted a lot of kids. With the technology boom being what it is, kids are really aware. And on the one hand, that's incredible because it's going to have an effect on this generation that they grow up with a lot of different issues in mind. And it's a lot for a young child's developing brain to take in these huge global issues. Right. It makes a lot of sense to me that we see more anxiety diagnoses or depression diagnoses or suicidality. They're just exposed to a lot of different things. So trauma absolutely is important and unfortunately happens to a lot of kids, but there is a lot on their shoulders. And, you know, as the things that we're talking about impact adults, it means it's impacting parents, their own stress, and their kids are absolutely picking up on that. So it's pretty much impossible to separate parent well-being and child well-being.
And Kim has some young ones at home too, so she's living all this.
Yep, I do. And we're going to get to Happy Pillar. So do you want to talk about how that came about? Because I think that ties in a lot to that parent experience and interaction with children that you were talking about.
Definitely. So I can share this story with permission from Sam Gardner, our CEO and co-founder of Happy Pillar, who is also a really close friend of mine. So I'll backtrack a bit to the pandemic. I believe this was pre-vaccine, so folks were still very much in the throes of working from home and no childcare being available, or rather not the childcare that they were used to being available. Yeah. And Sam, who I've known since 2012, we actually went to college together, but didn't know each other there. So she's a good friend of mine. She had her second child in the middle of that peak pandemic. And her older child had a really tough time with the adjustment. A new sibling is a huge adjustment. Yeah. But in the middle of a pandemic, there was a lot going on. And she knew that my focus and passion area was early childhood. So she called me and asked my opinion on what they might do, how to support her older one. He was having a lot of behavior challenges. He just wasn't himself as she knew him. And she knew that as a parent, there was maybe more that she could be doing or more that she could learn about to support him and address those big behaviors. And my recommendation was a specific modality called parent-child interaction therapy, or PCIT. It's something that I'm certified in, that I used in my work a lot, and is evidence-based. It's been around for decades. It's been researched internationally, and it is fantastic for strengthening attachment relationships. And it's often used for addressing big behaviors like tantrums and physical aggression, that sort of thing. So she went for it. She took my recommendation, found a PCIT provider, and it transformed her life. It improved her child's behaviors, but she also felt like it made her a better, calmer, more present parent. She only had good things to say about it. And it just so happened that it clicked with her professional background as well. She has worked in tech for a long time and startups, and she had knowledge of AI way before it was a common talking point. And she realized that a lot of the elements from that therapy could be delivered in another form. So PCIT uses a parent coaching model. The parent is receiving live feedback from a licensed therapist as they play with their child and talk to them. A therapist is there encouraging them to use specific parenting techniques that, again, are evidence-based. We know that it positively impacts kids. It helps with so many different concerns. And she realized, wait a minute, based on my professional background, I think there's a way that parents can do some of this at home. Not in any way as a replacement for therapy. We'll never replace therapy. But for those parents that are on long wait lists, or they want to supplement their therapy and make it as efficient as possible, or for those parents that are maybe on the fence for whatever reason, they're not sure it will really work and they want to try something at home. And for those that, for whatever reason at that time, can't afford weekly therapy. And when Sam presented this idea to me, she says that my words were, it's not going to work. I don't remember it exactly that way. I remember being a little gentler, but in her mind, I shut it down right away. You know, my background is all clinical. It's all very relational, in person or live via telehealth. And the idea to me, I mean, tech is really not my, it's not what I'm predisposed to. And it just sounded wild. And her first question in response was, well, what is your wait list right now? And I said 6 to 12 months. And she said, see, this is a big issue. There are not a lot of therapists that are specialized in working with young children. Even those that are have long wait lists, or it might be cost prohibitive. And she said, wouldn't you love to give your families on those long wait lists something evidence-based to do so that they're not completely lost, or they're not just following a personality on social media? Sorry, social media folks, some of y'all are off the fence, maybe are not professionals. Wouldn't you like to give them something you have confidence will actually help to get them there? And for those parents that are thinking, oh, there's a little something going on, I'd like to address this with my child before it balloons into a huge issue. And this might resonate with Kim in the world of speech therapy, doing some prevention and early intervention before there is such a big issue that something really intensive and costly is even required. And so that's how she sold me, was the accessibility piece. And she went for it, put her time and heart and soul into it, and she created Happy Pillar. And about a year in, I came on board as the clinical director. And here we are today.
Great. Wow. Yeah. When you talk about the interaction therapy, it sounds basically exactly like what we do in early intervention working on speech development. But it's, so it's a lot of the same things, just with maybe a different goal, and maybe the same goal, because a lot of times behavior is communication and communication is behavior. Yes. So they intertwine so much.
Absolutely. And the idea that, well, a few things that parent-child relationship can be the intervention, whether it be speech or a mental health concern, a big life transition or healing trauma. The relationship itself is so powerful. So sometimes when, you know, teachers or parents would be skeptical, I would remind them, you know, when we teach a young child to read, we don't give them a book and send them in a corner and say, good luck, let me know when you can read. Maybe figure it out, but it is going to take a long time. A skill like that is very relational. They sit down with a caring teacher or a grandparent or whoever it is, and they learn, oh, their brains are making all of these neural connections. Reading works this way. It sounds this way. My parent is describing what I'm seeing. This is something social. This is, feels good to me. And that is going to be a million times more effective than sending a five-year-old off mm-hmm. to just get a book by themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of speech, I'm guessing, works in a similar way. Mm-hmm. But yes, you're absolutely right that behavior is communication and vice versa. It's also tough for us as adults to truly know what we sound like to a child. Sometimes we'll work with a parent, you might experience this, Kim, and say, okay, what would be great and really helpful for your child is if you focus on the positive and call out some specifics of what you want to see more of. And they'll say, I do that. Of course I do that. That's all that I do. And then when you're right there supporting them, they start to realize, oh, I thought I was way more patient and positive mm-hmm. and specific. I thought I'd never criticized or asked a million questions. And we can support them in building that awareness. So I wonder if PCIT and Happy Pillar and speech have that in common as well.
Yes, really very much so. Uh-huh. Yep. There's a program called the Hannon Program, and they have a course called It Takes Two to Talk. And a lot of the things are so close to what you're talking about in there. We will video parents, their interactions with each other, with the child, so they can assess and say, oh, you know what? You said not to ask questions and I thought I wasn't, but I caught myself this many times in there. And it's all about that, like building that the connection comes before the communication. So they're so, so intertwined.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I love that. Yes, connection has to come before communication for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if someone downloads Happy Pillar, what would they find on it?
So Happy Pillar has two versions, a free version and a premium version. And there are codes out there, promo codes, so folks can try the premium version if they want to for free and then decide if they want to continue. But either way, they're going to get several things in common. So they'll find some onboarding videos that introduce some of the basic principles of how and why this works. So a lot of what you're describing, what are those parenting skills that we're going to be supporting them with? Why and how is this connection, this relationship important? And really get them ready to use the app. The main platform is actually a 5-minute daily playtime where they're going to apply the skills that they've learned about in the videos. And one of the many amazing things about Happy Pillar, but this part is pretty groundbreaking, is that it's using voice recognition and coding to score that interaction. So if we're looking for a goal of 10 celebrations is what we call a specific praise. It can tell the parent, you used 8 of those celebrations. The goal is 10. Keep it up. Or as you said, questions and negative talk are two of the things that it's coding for. So it might say, hey, you went from 10 questions last week to 5 questions. Great work. You can review the video on reducing questions to get even better. So that non-directive playtime. They are actually setting the phone aside so that child is not having interaction with the phone. They're just setting it as a timer. It's separating the parent and the child verbalizations and then coding what the parent is saying so that they can see how aligned are they with those specific parenting skills. And from there, they get content recommendations. So again, maybe they're doing amazingly with the specific praise, but they need a little support on reducing their questions. They can be directed to a video or a quiz or an activity to support them with that. We're also keeping in mind their particular goals. So a parent at the beginning of the program selects a priority goal that they're working on. Maybe it's reducing tantrums or increasing the quality of their one-on-one time, or maybe it's kindergarten readiness. And then they can receive personalized recommendations with their goal in mind. Parents are also completing self-report, some weekly check-ins in the app so that they can see the behavior change over time. So whatever their particular goal is, they're going to get some questions and they can see, okay, this week when I use the Happy Pillar app, 5 times, I definitely saw an improvement on my goal. And then, oops, we dropped down. It was only 2 practices last week. I did see that behavior start to climb up again. And they can see for themselves how the app is directly helping. And hopefully it encourages them to keep going, because we know research tells us the more that they're practicing, the more consistent they are, the better results they're going to get. So they get all of that in the app, the free or the premium version. There are a few benefits to the premium version, like they can have accounts for multiple children. The free version is just for one. So for those families that have a lot of younger children, the premium version might be better for them. It also shows them their scores for a longer period of time. With the free version, you see your most recent scores from your happy time, is what we call the 5 minutes of play. And premium allows them to see the whole history, which is great. But either way, they're going to get content from licensed therapists, some psychoeducation on child behavior and how to handle various common parenting concerns, as well as how to make the most of the app. And they're going to get that non-directive play platform with the coding and the scores.
That's amazing. We might need to talk to Sam about using some of that technology to spin off into some speech related
100%. And I apps, which is not my area amazing of whatsoever. What we probably have in common is working a lot with kids and parents, meet some teachers. So there are some common themes, I'm sure, but I'm not a speech professional by any means. That being said, I've spoken to a few just about Happy Pillar and chatting about if they think it could help their families. And I've had several say, well, wait a minute, a lot of these parenting skills that you are applying for, you know, healthy attachment and addressing mental health concerns actually sounds a lot like what we're doing for speech. So you are 100% right. There is no reason that a speech professional couldn't use it exactly the way it is, but it would be great to add some content from licensed speech professionals too, to support parents with that. I know that's a common concern for families too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I recently had someone ask me about a family member that was showing some delays in interaction and communication and really not trying to get people's attention or anything like that. And then one of the comments they made that were they were worried that the parents just didn't know how to play, that this was the, you know, first child, only child, parents were both like very intellectual, but just didn't know how to play. And I think that we see that sometimes too. And so this would be something that would you could hand them and would help them know how to play more?
100%. Yes. It includes suggestions for toys to use for this non-directive time. It explains why just 5 minutes a day using these skills can make a difference. So we are not by any means expecting parents to avoid questions, commands, and criticism all day long. It's really about this concentrated dose of non-directive, healthy attachment, supportive, positive time. And what's incredible is that thanks to PCIT and other evidence-based modalities that use some version of special playtime, we know that 5 minutes a day is really the dose that we need to see a difference. Wow. Now, not just 5 minutes of any play, although 5 minutes of one-on-one play, that's awesome. I'm all for it. But to really shape behavior most effectively, to see those mood changes or to see anxiety decrease, it's really this specific set of positive parenting skills. But yes, we talk a lot about this particular kind of play, this non-directive play, and what that does for kids. And another amazing thing is that we know it reduces parent stress. And so that's a fantastic kind of cycle to contribute to, is that parent stress decreases. They start to enjoy their time with their child more. The child tends to thrive. You know, one of the skills is enjoyment, and that can't be understated. A parent could come in, but if they are tense, if they are frustrated, if they'd rather be doing something else, and they deliver those parenting skills like a praise, for example, but it sounds like it's not genuine or they're not present, the child is going to know, and it's not going to be therapeutic. Yes, I think a lot of parents who are absolutely well-intentioned and have strengths in so many other ways don't totally know how to play and enjoy their child and just let go for a few minutes. So that definitely comes up in the app.
So, Chloe, what are some of the outcomes you're seeing now, and how long has the app been available?
So the app has been around. It was founded officially in 2022. Sam could tell you all the details. It started off available on just iPhones, and then eventually Androids were added too. Right now it is a cell phone app. And so it's been available for a while, but we started out with a smaller pilot, and the pilot results were phenomenal. The parents were reporting consistently, I want to say it was around 90% of parents said that in using the regular practice, their stress decreased and the goal that they set did get better. So some of the outcomes that we can expect are related to, you know, whatever the parent is really focused on, but definitely that parent stress decreasing is a big one. We hope that they'll come away with a lot of applicable psychoeducation around early childhood development, not only around play, but healthy expectations for normative child behavior. Mm-hmm. And I always warn parents, developmentally appropriate does not mean easy. There are some developmentally appropriate things that we see that are very tough for parents to manage and stay regulated around. Mm-hmm. And yet having healthy, developmentally appropriate expectations for your child actually does decrease stress. If we expect mm-hmm. a three-year-old to do calculus every day, we're going to wake up stressed thinking, why doesn't my three-year-old, what's wrong with them? What's going on? Right. What am I doing wrong? Do I need to buy a book about toddlers and calculus? But of course, most of us know that's not an appropriate expectation. So we do not wake up and stress about that sort of thing. But we do wake up and stress about a lot of things that young children do that with some support from Happy Pillar or elsewhere, we can learn, oh, that's not just my child. This is an important right. part. This is a building block in their development. And here's how I can support them better. So this can, you know, resolve. We can move mm-hmm. out of the tantrum stage or the biting stage or whatever it might be faster. And then for the kids, Happy Pillar can help with an array of things. That's part of what I love about it is that it can be a match for so many families looking for so many different things. We know that it can help with social emotional skills. So having that healthy attachment, those healthy communications between parent and child can really support their social emotional skills. We know that it can decrease their worrying and anxiety, improve their mood. So for kids with some depressive symptoms or persistent sadness, it can really help with that. And it can decrease challenging behaviors like physical and verbal aggression and big tantrums too.
So what age ranges does it target?
Great question. So it is evidence-based for kids between the ages of 2 and 7, and that is developmental age. So we leave it as, you know, parents are the experts of their kids. Maybe they have a 2-year-old that presents as a little bit younger for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. It will not hurt with any age range. You know, you could, I did it with my son when he was 1 because it was more for my skill building. He mm-hmm. was kind of doing his own thing and not really engaged in play with me, but it certainly will not hurt. And same thing with older children, you know, parent of an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old.
I have a 12-year-old.
Try. And what I'd say is,
I think it's a different play. It might look like, you know, making the Taylor Swift friendship bracelets or something like that.
So you're exactly right. You know, from your own experience, what happens around 7, 8, and of course it depends on the child, is that they do tend to be more capable of a talk-oriented therapeutic exchange. Mm-hmm. And it's not that it would hurt, but a 12-year-old might roll their eyes a little bit. If you get out resets, you know, you get out your Legos and your finger paints, they might just go, I don't know if I'm interested. Whereas your average 5-year-old is going to be thrilled to sit down with a parent.
I have one of those too. So okay. We're still good.
And of course, that being said, you know, you're not going to hear anything. You think, oh my goodness, my 12-year-old is going to hate that. They just might be a little confused and are much less likely to engage with it. So that ideal age where we have the research that shows it's going to be effective is between 2 and 7.
Awesome. So I did download it when you first, when I first found out that you were going to be on the podcast. And I like just the, and I didn't get too far into it before life got crazy and there were a million IEPs to do in the last couple of months. But I did just that, the first direction of just that 5 minutes. Like it was just something that wasn't overwhelming, that it was like, I can do that for 5 minutes. So I just remembered like when I first, like, watched your videos of talking about it and everything that I was like, okay, pool. I can't do anything else. I have to have my eyes on her anyways. Let's have some really focused, interactive play. And it did make a huge difference. And my issue I'm trying to deal with is I had a baby. She turned a year 2 weeks before the pandemic. So she has basically been, and I work from home, so we're kind of attached at the hip. And she's got to go to kindergarten. So
okay.
At some point, we're going to have to work on that ability to separate. So
Happy Pillar is great for that. Yes. Kindergarten readiness is definitely one of the things that can be worked on. And it's really, again, thinking about those social and emotional skills, that self-confidence, and with attachment, there's an idea of a felt sense of security. So this idea that with a healthy attachment relationship with a primary caregiver, kids and eventually adults go out into the world and feel this anchor of security that even if they're not physically together, that relationship is serving them out in the world. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're hoping for your kiddos. They're going to go off to kindergarten and not, you know, forget about you or not have the close relationship that already exists, but have that felt sense of security of, I feel that calm and that support, that presence from my caregivers, even when we have a physical separation, and that confidence that you will reunite at the end of the day.
So Chloe, how can, other than downloading the app, I know you have a website as well, if people want to learn more about the app itself. So how would you suggest people reaching out and learning more?
Definitely check out the website, download the app, and really feel free to reach out. Our contact form is there. You know, it gets checked. We try to respond to everything from customer feedback to technical concerns. We are on it. That's something we really take pride in, is supporting our user base and getting the most out of the app. We want everyone to be successful with Happy Pillar. So questions, concerns, if you want Happy Pillar in your school or you want your pediatrician to offer a promo code, please reach out to us, because we want this to be accessible to everyone. We want to do everything we can to reduce those barriers. And the more people download the app and share with us, you know, where they want it, and the more they encourage their schools and their providers to use it, the better. But truly, no question or concern too small for us.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, good luck with everything. It sounds wonderful. It's, you know, it's very impressive what you guys are doing. And so come back in a year and give us an update.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to thank Chloe for joining us on this episode. I know we are always looking for resources that can support, you know, a child's mental health and a parent's mental health. And I think if you go check out what they're doing at Happy Pillar, I think you'll be very impressed. And that's Happy, HappyPillar.com, HappyPillar.com. And we'll have more information in our show notes about Happy Pillar. It's a great app. And I think if you recommend it to your patients, your families that you're working with, the parents you're working with, I think they would get a great deal of help from this app. So that's my unpaid, unsolicited endorsement. So I've been very impressed with what they're doing. So With that, thank you for listening to this episode. If you don't mind, leave us that 5-star review and help share this episode, this podcast, with as many people as you can. We want to really get more ears listening to this podcast. So if you can help us in any way of promoting this podcast, we are always very, very grateful for that help. And until next week, be safe and be kind. This has been a production of the 3C Digital Media Network.